everyone. You're listening to the ITV STV Rugby World Cup podcast with me, Flats, and him,
Shanko.
Hi, Shanko. How you doing?
Hi, Flats. So, yeah, I'm good. I'm okay. A little bit disappointed after that result because it's Sunday night here in Tokyo. We've just witnessed South Africa narrowly beating Wales. I'm trying to sound upbeat, but
you're not.
I'm not.
Look, we're going to analyse the two semi-finals in a bit. But in terms of, have you enjoyed the semi-final weekend? Like, I take it you enjoyed watching the match on Saturday. The atmosphere was great and all that stuff.
Oh, immensely. Immensely. It was a brilliant weekend of rugby. Although, you know, we knew yesterday, Saturday, the England-New Zealand game was going to be the spectacle. I think we all deep down knew Wales, South Africa, with the injuries, with the type of play, the form was going to be a kick fest. But sometimes you get that semi-final time, innit? You've got to do what you've got to do to get through to a final. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I found it really interesting, actually. Like, the England game, I just, like, you know, as I said before the game, I thought England could win it, but New Zealand, in terms of probability, would win it. And that's how the form dictated it. But I just did not see, well, no one saw that coming from England. No one saw that coming. It was just amazing. But it made for an incredible atmosphere, actually, because I think people were completely blown away by how good England were, actually. Greatest side of the All Blacks of all time. Getting beaten is thrilling, isn't it? And equally, it's thrilling when they're on top form. So it's just a great atmosphere. But the atmosphere was very, very different for South Africa, Wales. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But it was, yeah, it was an entirely different. It's like, it was honestly like watching, being at a different competition in some ways. The atmosphere was still a great test match atmosphere, but it was nothing like as intense as the day before. That's for sure. Have you spoken to any of the Welsh boys?
Yeah, I went in the dressing room after, mate. They just gave me three cheers, just picking them up. walked round and congratulated everyone individually. Prince William would do, Prince Charles.
Yeah.
Tap on the head. Don't worry, mate. It's all right. You've got New Zealand in 5 days' time. Get up for that, yeah?
Oh, just on the bus back. It's quite late here. Sorry, we're yawning a bit. But I was just on the bus back from the game back to Tokyo, and I was sitting with Paul O'Connell, and he just it's a five-day turnaround for a third, fourth place playoff against New Zealand.
Yeah, but New Zealand don't have many players available for selection. It's not as if they've got to play Ben Smith, Ryan Crotty.
Yeah, minging in it, support them.
Sonny Bill Williams giving loads of the players a bit of game time. God, no. Anyway, Fatsy. So, joy for England, desperate disappointment for Wales. And if you want to relive the highs, not so much the lows, of these two semi-finals, all you've got to do is get yourself to ITV Hub, where you can watch the highlights of every single game of the tournament.
Right, pop quiz time, Tommy. And our dear listeners at home, on the tube, in the car, wherever, here in Tokyo, can play along with us too. After the England game, I caught up with a load of the protagonists, sort of players and coaches and that, to garner their respective reactions. Just don't look at your notes, all right? So don't cheat. See how many of the voices you can correctly identify. Okay, here goes.
England's first World Cup semi-final for 12 years. Two teams still chasing their dreams. George Ford, they have another world-class kicker.
That one never looked like missing, did it? England now in a really commanding position.
And England are heading to a World Cup final again. It's one of the most extraordinary results in World Cup history.
Sam, how are you feeling? You've taken England to a World Cup final.
We've got another week in the comp, so we're excited about that. Another prospect to work hard, see where we can take our game, see how we can get better.
Happy with that?
Pretty happy, yeah.
Reasonably muted celebrations. Why is that?
We've got one to go. Look, it was an incredible battle out there today. One of the fiercest test matches I've been involved in. And look, you can't get too far ahead of yourself. I think test match rugby is an emotional rollercoaster at the best of times. But all we've got to focus on is celebrating tonight and then looking ahead. Whoever we play in the final, we've got an amazing opportunity to do something special for our country next weekend.
By and large, I thought the boys did a really good job today. Stuck at it, got some good continuity in our attack, yeah.
And it must just have been, apart from being quite difficult and reasonably tiring, it must have just been great fun to be part of that pack today.
Yeah, it's brilliant. You know, half the messages were just stick at it and boys are smiling, which when you're blowing is a nice achievement,
I'm
really.
Smiling, Mitch.
You try to play them at their game, you're going to come off second best. And I thought we stuck to our game really well. you know, early on in the game, because we were getting some quick ball, we loosened up a little bit and probably missed a couple of opportunities to score. But I thought just the discipline of our players was outstanding in attack and defence.
Boys were disappointed. We had a goal in this tournament, was to win the tournament, plain and simple. And we were beaten by a very good English team today that denied us an opportunity to go forth and try and accomplish that. And credit to the English team, they played very well today.
You never know when you've actually fully beaten New Zealand until that final whistle goes, and that's the same today. So look, we've bought ourselves another week, something to get excited about and enjoy, and keep our heads down because we want to win this thing.
If you want to play good rugby, you have to enjoy yourself, and we definitely played some good rugby today. It was tough. It required an awful lot of concentration. I don't think whenever you play the All Blacks, you have to concentrate from minute one to minute 85 because, you know, there's always extra time when you play the All Blacks. So it was good. We're very happy with the win, and we'll keep it moving.
I'm sure you were all confident you could win that game, but did you have any idea it might be quite so exceptional a performance?
We knew we had to be somewhere near that to beat them. They're an incredible team. They've got threats all over the field, but like I said, they're never beaten. So we had to be somewhere near our best. Funnily enough, we could have executed a little bit better at times to maybe put the game to bed a bit early, but we'll definitely take it and get ourselves ready.
And of course, you're not done and dusted. There's another game next Friday night for third spot. I know it's your job, but it's pretty hard to motivate for a game like that, is it not?
I think it is. But you're right, it's our job. We're athletes and we're rugby players, and our duty is to perform and to be better than we were each week. And regardless of game, regardless of context, our job is to prepare as All Blacks and perform as All Blacks each and every time we get the opportunity to.
And lots of people would have made you underdogs for this match, but after that performance, you'll be favourites next weekend. You okay with that?
Well, we don't bet. We don't look at the bookies, so we're not really concerned. You know, our expectation is the most important thing. How we try to get better every day.
I got Eddie Jones.
Obviously, easy.
Jamie George.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that was Underhill and Curry then. Not sure of the next one.
Okay. Think Curtly Beale.
Was it Curtly Beale?
Definitely wasn't him, no. He's at home now.
Okay. Why'd you give me that then? I don't know. I give up.
TJ Perenara.
Yes, knew it. George Ford and obviously Maratoji. So.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, that's not that difficult, is it? Let's be honest.
Well done. No, now, one of the things Eddie Jones said, with the one of the secrets to their keys to England's success was that they stuck to their own game plan rather than trying out New Zealand. What do you reckon to that?
I think they did stick to their game plan. Their game plan was, like any team to play New Zealand, is to stop them from playing, is to starve them from ball, is to win all the collisions. You do that for 80 minutes, you will beat New Zealand. And they did that. I thought it was the best performance I've seen from an England team. To make New Zealand look fairly ordinary takes a lot. And England did that. And New Zealand were lucky to score a try. You know, it was only the overthrow from Jamie George which allowed them to score. Otherwise, every single aspect of the game, you break that game down to everything. You know, breakdown, collisions, gain line, whatever you want to break it down to. England won all of those battles.
This is a really pointless thing to say, but I'm going to say it. But the disallowed try, the first one was right, I thought. The second one I thought was incorrect. The Jamie George fumble, which the forward pass, which wasn't a forward pass type thing, in the mall, losing control and that kind of stuff. I think that should have been a try, personally. That gets awarded. And England's line out, after all that talk, Steve Borthwick take a bow. That line out was absolutely fantastic. And it ended up the New Zealand line out crumbled more than England's did. A brilliant performance for the England pack when they've got two outright jumpers instead of four. That's very, very strong. But when they fluff their lines 5 yards out from their own line and the surveyor scores, you know, that probably doesn't happen again in the next 10 games.
No,
so you iron those two things out and suddenly you're looking at getting on for a 25-30 point margin. And I actually think that would have been a fairer reflection of the game. And
yeah, I agree, mate.
You know, there'll be loads of Kiwis saying you arrogant this and arrogant that. Fine, not bothered. There was not a facet of the game where England weren't completely dominant, was there? It was everywhere.
I'm a neutral in this, right? Because, you know, I support Wales. It doesn't really matter to me who wins. If, you know, I look at it, if anything, it's better for England to win if Wales are going to make it through to a final, in my opinion, because Wales not beating New Zealand in 500 years. Now I think it's about 60-odd.
66, I mean, yeah.
They were. I mean, 10-0 down at halftime, you think, right, the Kiwis are going to come back. There's no doubt about that. There'd be a loose kick. Barrett will just open them up. They'll play quick, fast ball. They'll start offloading. But, and I know you've gone on about this more than me and these pods, is what I really enjoyed and what England and especially Tom Curry and Sam Underhill have shown the world is that you can still be dominant and physical in a tackle by going low, because they were. You don't have to hit up top to win collisions. They folded people in half just by hitting waist below. They nailed every single person that ran at them. And you don't often see that, because normally to be physical and dominant, you have to go high. But you know, they have set the tone now for the new type of tackle, I think, in rugby.
Yeah, and actually they're more dominant, but I think Courtney Laws has been doing it for about 5 years. He's got nearly 80 caps now, and he's been nailing people low, knocking people about for years. There are obviously other guys that do it, but Underhill and Curry are just, I mean, wow. If those two stay fit, I mean, imagine what they could be doing at the next World Cup, but that's looking too far ahead.
I know. There's huge calls, Flats, as well. If you think back to the quarterfinal where Ford had a different role, England do really well against Australia, then Ford comes back in a different role in the starting 15. I mean, two big calls, right? And
yeah,
100% have paid off.
I've got a theory for you.
I thought Ford was brilliant at the weekend. I thought they'd have to score some tries. You'd have to attack New Zealand. I don't think you can sit back. And not only his attack, but kicking under pressure. Cometh the hour.
Wasn't he great?
What's your theory? Go. I love these.
Why did he drop George Ford for the Australia game?
Why did he drop George Ford? The only thing I can think of is that, were they saving him? Were they saving him for the set? No.
No, it's not a theory. No, this isn't the theory. Just I'm looking for the actual answer. Like, they dropped him because of Karevi.
Okay, by switching players, George Ford and Owen Farrell between positions, it's harder to analyse teams.
No. I think you're misunderstanding my question. The theory part, it's not a theory. Ignore the theory thing. I'm wondering something.
Well, just tell me then.
They dropped George Ford because of Karevi, right?
I was going to get to that about him being able to target him in defence.
Yeah, so they dropped him because, and Eddie Jones said it, because England's defence is at its most brutal when Owen's at 10. And they're worried about Karevi because he was the best ball carrier in the World Cup, right? So who have South Africa got next week at 12? Dielende.
Yeah.
He is freak. He's not the most nuanced player, most sophisticated player. He is unbelievably strong. He was just monstering people today, right? I think they might drop George Ford for the final.
Okay.
Bring him on with 20, 30 to go. I think they might. I think they might, boy.
We'll get into it in a bit when we touch upon the Wales game, but he certainly caused Dan Bigger a load of problems.
He really did, yeah. A lot of that was to do with tackle technique, but still, he's very, very strong. But yeah, the England performance was Kyle Sinclair. I mean, are you kidding me? How good was Kyle Sinclair? Just that outrageously good. And Mark Wilson, when he came on, the turnover and the hit. Oh, my days. I think that's Sonny Bill he nailed. Like, Mark Wilson, I think it was Mark Wilson, absolutely drilled Sonny Bill when he ran it in big dump tackle head on. It was just an unbelievable performance. And I think Steve Thompson, the hooker, put on Twitter, wasn't perfect because they left 20 points out there. And I tell you what, I bet he's not far off. Like, well, this isn't showing off. This is, we all watch the game.
No.
We love the All Blacks. Everyone loves the All Blacks. But England absolutely pumped them. And if they play at anything like that level, we'll talk about it in a minute next week, but I just don't see anyone living with them if they play like that.
How many times do you see teams playing like that for a half and then, you know, that they've got to say a 10-point lead, a 7-point lead against the All Blacks coming at half time, but then the pressure that the All Blacks mount in the second half is just unbearable and they come back to win it with 10, 5 minutes to go. That didn't happen at all for England. That they just kept going and going and going. Had the game gone on another 10 minutes, there probably would have been 20 more points. You know, they were that good, and it was really worrying, actually, watching that performance, because you go back to the Australia game, that was another very good England performance. That was the best performance of the World Cup. And you think, right, can they back that up again? They have.
Yeah.
Even better. So it's going to be hard to bet against England now, knowing that they can back up performance after performance. I looked at the game, mate. I couldn't see any weaknesses in that performance. So that's worrying for whoever they're playing.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, because Steve Borthwick's England's forwards coach, South Africa's maul is a big weapon.
Yeah.
You know England will be the best prepared maul defence team on earth come Saturday.
And also, South Africa won't be able to bully teams physically as well, because England have got the size and power. It's not even weight. You know, it's not even to do with how heavy Sam Underhill is or Tom Curry compared to Steph Detoy or Vermeulen. It's mindset and it's how hard you hit and your power output. And those two, what a combination. What a combination they found.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, because you were commentating, weren't you, today, but because you won't have listened to ours, but we had a graphic come up on our screen that was the pack weights. And I said, I want to mention that because everyone says massive South African pack, massive, massive. There are some big men in there. They're a couple of kilos lighter a man than Wales. You know, there are guys in there that are not physical freaks.
Yeah.
Peter Steph Detoy was, for me, the best player on the field by, I mean, even better than D'Alanda. I thought Peter Steph Detoy was just outrageous today. I just had a lemonade upstairs and Brian O'Driscoll, who wasn't at the game, I said, what did you reckon? And he said that Peter Steph Detoy. And I said, yeah, exactly, because he's just phenomenal. And he just, his output of aggressive work was just relentless. And he's a big bloke. He's, what, 6'6 or 6'7? But he don't weigh a lot. I mean, you know, he's like Courtney Laws is a big man, but he doesn't weigh an awful lot. He weighs a lot less than his props. And you don't have to be 6'8 and 25 stone to be knocking people about. You just got to be have a lot of power and have the right mindset, haven't you?
Well, let's get some more reaction to the game from somebody who knows what it takes to win a World Cup. I wonder who that can be. Yeah, you guessed it. Sir Clive Woodward sent us this message after the final whistle.
Hi, Shanks Flax. Doing your podcast again. Wow, what an amazing match. I have to say, I thought England by 5 going into the game. I just thought our players, man for man against the All Blacks team, really stood up well. But when they started, it was just the variety of the game and the sheer power, especially defensively, just not from the start, but throughout the whole 80 minutes. And there were some amazing performances, but I just go back to Owen Farrell. I think him to stay on the pitch when he was obviously banged up was immense. And he's fit, England are going to win every game. I thought he was fantastic. And Mauro Tojo, rightly man of the match, he was amazing. For the whole team, all the bench, you know, a big congratulations to Eddie Jones. He got it right again. And, you know, I thought England would win, but it was really, really quite a one-sided game in the end. And I think a lot of the All Blacks fans would be in kind of deep shock at the moment because they didn't really fire a shot. It wasn't their fault. It was just amazing performance by England. So, you know, big week now. Feed up for a couple of days and look forward to hopefully playing Wales next Saturday.
So Clive starts off, I felt like he was saying, I'm doing your podcast again. Like, hopefully he enjoys it. That's the point, isn't it? Mm. I think he enjoys it. I bet he enjoyed this weekend. He predicted England by 5 going into the game. Do you know what? He was right. He was wrong, but right, if you know what I mean. So he said England would win it all along. And I think he's said that for a long time. But one of the only people, in fact, I read a lot of rugby stuff just like you do and do a lot of social media just like you do.
You do more.
I read a lot of articles in there and stuff, but the only person I can think of who said New Zealand are not going to win this World Cup before the World Cup started, comfortably before it, and has been saying it for a while, saying this is why they're not going to win it. They're not going to win it. England could win it. New Zealand are not going to win it. And everyone's been hammering him for it. It was Stuart Barnes.
He's all of a sudden grown to 6'5", isn't he?
Yep, Stuart Barnes.
I know, and we said it up. We mentioned it after the Ireland game when we thought that was their best performance, but yeah.
God, they were good in that first half against Ireland. They were amazing, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They were brilliant. They're not a bad teammate at all. They're a phenomenal team, and I think people forget what they've done and back-to-back World Cups and how they've been number one team for just forever. It was just they came up against a better team all around the field. That is all.
I was sat with some guys like crew members, you know, during the game. So I was doing this pitch side input thing with Brian. It's a couple of crew members. And I was like, at half time, one of the guys was like, God, England look good. I said, tell you what New Zealand need to do. They'll take Barrett off and they'll put Sam Kane on.
Yes, massively needed that.
And he came out and Sam Kane, and they looked at me like, oh my God, you really know your stuff. I was like, don't worry about it. When you know, you know.
Tell all your mates that I'm the Oracle.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knew. Everyone in the world knew, really. So what do you reckon they do now? But Clive said, do you reckon they just basically chill for a week, run through a few things and get it done?
Well, this is the hardest thing, I think, for the coaches, for the strength and conditioning guys, for Eddie, is just to gauge where the squad are at physically, because it's bound to have taken their time. It has helped. There's no doubt it has helped having 2 weeks off. Not off, but 2 weeks without a game during the World Cup pool stages. That has helped. So it's where they are physically. I mean, you'd want to think that England would just continue what they've been doing because it's been working. If you switch off, maybe you come a little bit complacent. Maybe you don't feel right that you haven't done enough prep. So I'm under the theory of you just keep doing what you've done week in, week out in this World Cup. You don't change at all. You keep everyone with the same mindset. They know what's happening, whether it's a contact day on Tuesday. They've got an extra day off as well compared to South Africa. But I think physically it was far more demanding for England than it was for South Africa today, but just because of the pace of the game and the collisions, it was quite a slow game with Wales. So it was physical, but that pace, that first 20 minutes of England, wow.
Yeah, astonishing. So England face the South African Springboks in the final at 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. on Saturday, UK time. Coverage with Poogs et al. Starts at 7 a.m, 2-hour build-up. Why not? Live and exclusive on ITV. Get booking your table in the Boozer now if they open at 7 a.m. They must do. Wow, that is early.
We like to know what's what in the world, don't we, Tommy?
Yeah, we do. The Economist is far more than just economics and finance, David. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, arts, the environment, and, of course, sport.
Yeah, and I was on the internet recently. There was an article about how little's being done to protect sportsmen and women from brain injuries, which is pretty topical at this stage. Some of the hits we've seen in this World Cup, holy majoli. And there was another one on how Japan's learned to love rugby, and they really, really have. From what we've witnessed, they really, really adopted it. They love it.
And what's great about The Economist, it sifts through all the noise. It focuses on the essential information. It tells the real story.
Yeah, and it's been going for over 170 years. Did you know that?
No.
Now you know.
It's for the kind of person who never stops asking questions, Dave, and wants to know why the world is that way. Why?
Yeah, and The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you've never stopped asking questions, you can get a free copy now. For your free print copy of The Economist, just text ITV to 78070.
That is ITV to 78070.
I'm Sam Warburton, and you're listening to the ITV Rugby World Cup podcast.
So it wasn't to be, was it, Tommy? Wales going down 19-16 in the end to South Africa in a brutal, if slightly unsophisticated, affair in Yokohama, settled by Andre Pollard's 76th minute penalty. Get your thoughts in a moment, boy, after we've heard from a pretty downbeat Gareth Thomas.
It's Alfie here. A little bit of a sad Alfie, or very much a sad Alfie, actually. Game's just finished. Really close game. Titanic up front battle, like we knew it was going to be. A lot of kicking of the ball. A lot of mistakes, a lot of attempts at slowing ball down and slowing the game down. Kind of a missed tackle by Bigger, which South Africa let in for a try. But great invention then when Wales needed to invent. So you had Patchell kicking for the line instead of what they'd usually go for the posts. And it seemed like they were going to show some creativity, but then getting back level, everything kind of went back to the arm wrestle. And unfortunately, when you play South Africa, when you're in play South Africa for 80 minutes in an arm wrestle, usually there's only one winner. And sadly, at the very end, they kind of won that arm wrestle a little bit. Tough penalty given away, but fair play to Pollard. He held his nerve and kicked them for the victory.
Yeah, a little bit downbeat. I am as well. I mean, if you look at the big games that Wales played, Fiji, Australia, France, right? They lost the possession, they lost the territory count. And this one, they had the possession and territory, but couldn't really do anything with it. Now, we both commented at the game, you were there as well. Wales tried to play more rugby than South Africa. South Africa had nothing behind the pack. All they did was go to the air with Pollard, with Faf de Klerk, and just look for scraps. Wales, I thought in the first half, were pretty poor under the high ball. Gareth Davis dropped a couple, weren't really commanding the air. Lee Halfpenny was very good, one of his best games I've seen him play. And Wales looked more creative. Off set piece in the South African half, you're talking 30, 40 metres out. Wales would send Hadley Parks up, then they would strike with their backs. John Davis was throwing passes, Josh Adams was going down the touchline, Gareth Davis breaking right, and they did look dangerous. But the problem with Wales is they couldn't get that possession and territory all the time. They were living off scraps. The game was played right in that centre field. And when you're up against that South African pack, it's difficult, isn't it? They were hammered in scrum time. The line-out drive was working for South Africa. And eventually, you are going to give a penalty away, you know, because the maul's going so far forward. And that's what happened. And that's how Pollard kicked his goals. But these Welsh team, these Welsh boys can hold their heads up high, right? They never gave up. They went and went and went after South Africa. They tried to match them physically, but it was just a difference in the packs, really, that did it for me.
Yeah, I agree with all that, really. I think what amazed me about South Africa is how little they played.
They didn't want to play, did they? It's crazy.
No interest. It's like, genuinely, they got weapons on the wing. Willie Leroux, when he's on it, is a brilliant attacking fullback. delete them. Don't need them. Being polite, it's not like the winger's kick chase was very good anyway.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't. Rubbish kick chase, because the kicks were rubbish.
And a lot of the wingers were going past the ball in the air as well anyway.
Mate, that's why in comms, we wondered about the lights, because it was like, here's just, people are, and Moriarty dropped two kickoffs, fumbled two kickoffs. You're like, are the lights, didn't affect anyone, the England game.
I think that was the wind, mate, because it was swirling a fair bit. Moriarty has ended up taking the ball backwards, and when he's getting man and ball then, you're moving backwards, you're just going to get hammered. He dropped one, didn't he? Then he got hammered for the second, but yeah.
The Welsh pack struggled. They struggled for power, and when they got, you know, it's like when they were pounding away for 20 phases at the South African line. My view is, well, this is great. You strung loads of phases together, and the South African defence is heroic. Well, it's heroic in effort, but they're not having to think at all. So it's one out and it's slow. It's impossible to score if you're one out and slow. You just don't score. They ended up winning a penalty, so it did work out. And then Alan Wynne-Jones made the decision to take the scrum, and I was like, wow.
We all were.
That is a massive decision, and it paid off. Well played. I mean, massive balls, great execution, just outstanding. Like, Moriarty did well at the base on a crumbling scrum. Seriously impressive cojones and execution. That was mega. But Wales, when they won the Grand Slam, didn't offer a huge amount in terms of cutting creative attack. They were more about staying in the fight, defending like beasts, and scoring enough. And in this World Cup, they've looked, I think, actually, maybe it's because of injuries, but a bit less creative than they did in the Six Nations, or no more creative, rather. But they've found a way to win, which is more important, frankly. So the fact that it got to 16 all and they'd done almost nothing, I was like, wow, they are just unbelievably mentally tough. But from a South African point of view, all they do is kick, and almost all they do is kick poorly. And the kick chase is poor. It's hard, to be fair, it's hard to consistently chase well when the kicking is so poor. So they just don't do anything. And you watched them and thought, do you know what? They can have an easy week, 6 day turnaround. They can put their feet up because they've got no attack to run through. They haven't. I'm serious. There's no attack to run through.
Well, they obviously do have attack, right? Because they've put 70 odd points on teams in this. I know it's Namibia, but so they have got an attack, right? But I just think that was just the whole ploy today. I don't think they wanted to attack. I just thought they want to take the game away from Wales. They just want to put the ball up every opportunity. And I was looking at that back line off scrums. A few times they used Delonde just to smash over Dan Bigger. And Dan Bigger, his technique suited the centre because Dan was just going high, soaking up a tackle. And then next minute, someone would latch on and they're driving 10 metres back. And that happened three or four times in the game. And then he hands Dan and I think it's Tomas Williams off for a try, which was a great individual try with penalty advantage. I think the Welsh boys just sort of switched off a little bit, thinking, right, they're going to put a kick up now. They've got penalty advantage. But Delonde ends up scoring a try. You know, tactically as well, they're putting the ball on kickoffs on Vermeulen. And we saw that a couple of times. He's just given him a 20-meter run-up. And poor Tom Francis.
I know. Poor bloke.
You got a guy, 120 kilos, who's got a 20-meter run-up on you, and all he's going to do is go straight. It's a difficult man to stop, and I feel sorry for him. And so you lose Thomas Francis, right, one of your best scrummagers. Then you lose George North with it looked like a knee or a hamstring.
Hamstring looked like, yeah.
Yeah, Owen Watkin has to come on then, out of position, because he's a centre. I mean, he would have trained a little bit on the wing, but he's not an international winger. And it made me laugh a little bit when he came on, because you can see a close-up, and he said to about three different boys, talk to me, right? Because he's
going,
he's going on the way. So, like, you know, if you're not used to it, you know, it doesn't come naturally to you. So, and then I thought it was going to go Wales's way. Honestly, when Alan Wynne made that decision, they scored a try.
So did I. Yeah.
Their momentum had swung a bit, and we saw a couple of drop balls. Faf de Klerk dropped the ball. Ville Leroux dropped the ball. And you think Frans Steen come on, there's only one reason he's come on, and that's for either long-range dropkick or a penalty. But I think it was two penalties flats right at the end with about 8 minutes to go. I think Wales get done for holding on inside South Africa's half. Pollard kicks the touch, they get a driving line out, they win the penalty, and fair play to Pollard nailing that kick. I mean, that is a high-pressure kick in a huge situation, and he puts it straight through the middle. And I don't think Wales really, realistically, could have done much more in that type of game.
Yeah, I think in terms of our point of view on those actual penalties, the Dylan Lewis in at the side, technically I think he joined from a legal position, but the whole ball swung around to his left.
Was that Ken Owens, sorry? Was it Ken Owens that got done for that? Or was this
I don't know who, because after the, when they actually gave the penalty, the before Pollard kicked it.
Okay, yeah, yeah, sorry, you are right.
The TV cameras actually focused on Reece Carey, but it wasn't him. I think it was Dylan Lewis. But I think he joined from a legal position, but the thing whipped around to his left and he kind of followed it in. I think it was just a complete accident. But I do think that you've got to be conscious that you're in front of a touch judge. You're dead in front of him. And if it peels away, you've got to drop off the side and roll back around, fold back around. You can't follow it in because it looks too lateral, your angle. So I think that was...
Yeah, it looks too obvious. Because Ken Owens got done like that in the, I think it was the first half as well. Similar situation.
You know, if it looks like that, you're just always running the risk. And the scrum penalty at the end, I know a couple of the Welsh players got up and I think they shouted that was, you know, they intimated to the ref they thought that was incorrect. But forwards do that when you get penalised at scrums, whether they're right or wrong. But it was absolutely the right call. It's absolutely the correct decision. So I think it's very, very tough on Wales. I mean, I'd be staggered, not staggered, that's the wrong word. I'd be really surprised if South Africa play that limited a game plan next week.
They can't, mate. How you can't play like that again. I know they're limited in attack, but that was a proper tactical decision. Just do what it takes to get through against Wales. You can't approach, that's not how to play rugby. You don't just maul and then just boot it in the air. They had nothing. They offered absolutely no phase play behind. I just think they wanted to stop Wales from playing, pin Wales back, and just try and suffocate them. And they were quite happy if the ball was going in the air because it's a 50-50, whether it's knocked on by South Africa, knocked on by Wales. Either way, it's a scrum. And that's what South Africa wanted, just scrums.
One thing that everyone noticed it, but I said in comms again, was that it's like 8-10 minutes before the end. Khaleesi comes off, Sia Khaleesi subbed off for Francois Lowe. And I just said, he is on for one reason and one reason only. He's a penalty hunter. He is looking for one penalty at the breakdown that turns this game at 16-all. And I watched him. He had in from the side, had a sniff, bang. Fourth or fifth attempt, bang. Locked on, game over. He is the best in the business at finding a penalty when you need one. And he got the penalty for the holding on thing, whatever it was. Jackal over the top. Mm. And that's where the kick for touch comes. It leads to Pollard's penalty that wins it. You just think such a useful unit to have on the bench because he goes on, he just hunts penalties and he finds them.
He does. And now, I think we mentioned it before, but the worst thing is you'd be sitting in that change room as a Welsh player now and you'd be thinking about the game. You'd just be devastated because they were in that game. They potentially could have won it. They are battered, right? Players limping off, injuries, and New Zealand in 5 days.
Oh, God, it's so tough. And Wales meet New Zealand in the third place playoff on Friday morning at 9:00. It's a game, obviously, nobody wants to play in, but they've got to play in it anyway. And the lads will do their best to give Warren Gatland, who's just a good old geezer, a right proper send-off against the nation of his birth. If you're at work, head to Twitter for all the action as it happens, or just we can't encourage anyone to pull a sickie legally, but it might be a good idea to get food poisoning on Thursday night if you can. We're at ITV Rugby if you want to do it, the Twitter thing.
Third or fourth playoff is like kissing your sister, isn't it?
Well, no, because you can win a playoff. I don't think kissing your sister is a win.
No, I'm talking about kissing your sister. That's what I mean. It's a win.
Oh, my boy, that's it, my boy.
So it's team of the semis time, Flats, and this might be your opportunity that you have been waiting for all the way through this Rugby World Cup, is to pick a pack of Englishmen. So go on, do you want to hit me with them? Is it just the England team?
No.
Okay.
Actually.
Interesting.
It's mainly the England team.
Okay.
England front row. You can't argue with that, can you?
No.
Second row, Marrow and Lo Diaga, who I thought was good for South Africa. I thought he was really good. I mean, good at what he does, just puts it about.
I mean, are you just putting him in because you don't want to pick a whole England team? Because Courtney Laws was very good at the weekend.
No, I've got someone else who's not English as well. But
okay.
I think also it's really hard to leave Peter Steph Dutoy out of the back row because he was just unbelievable for South Africa today. Just unbelievable. So what I've done is I've picked Curry Underhill and I've got a choice between Dwayne Vermeulen at 8 or Peter Steph Dutoy, who didn't play 8, playing 8.
Okay.
And I think that Nors is on Twitter, and you know who you are. You're going to pull me up if I pick a 6 or 7 at 8. So I think I'll probably go with Vermeulen because I thought he was great today. But Peter Steph Dutoy is coming on at halftime.
Okay.
Like Sam Kane did. So it's Curry Underhill, Vermeulen. Who's your... Just the England backline for you probably, isn't it?
No, not at all.
Whatever. Welsh backline, is it?
It's Ben Youngs.
So Hadley Parks at 10, yeah?
Tried that, didn't work. Ben Youngs at 9.
Yeah.
George Ford at 10. In the centres, Now, I was close to picking Delande, who I thought was a monster in attack and defence, but I thought Owen Farrell was brilliant at 12, so he's in my team. Manu Tuilagi at 13, and my back three, Johnny May, Anthony Watson, Elliot Daly. I've gone for it.
Oh, my God.
I've gone for the full England back line. I can't think of any other players that really... Delande was good. Pollard kicked his goals, but I'm trying to think of another player in the back line in those two semi-finals that deserves to be in that team after that performance. And it pains me to say, mate, I can't.
Why does it pain you? Just they're the best team, mate.
Yeah, because I know as I'm speaking, your ego and head is growing.
Whatever. I'm humble, mate. I'm neutral. feel free to disagree with that. Be aggressive. We'll pop it up on Twitter for you to get stuck into. We're particularly keen to know what Derek has to say for himself following his last outburst.
I blame the parents.
He's probably not young, is he? Don't hold back, Del, all right? Just rip into it. There's no time for film quotes this week, I'm afraid, this episode, because Shanko's got a pack. It's, by the way, it's midnight here in Japan, FYI. All the ITV crew are having a lovely drink downstairs, and all the Shanks' lot are else all having a drink somewhere. But we are here because we're great guys, and because we've got to get it done, as Shanks has got to pack his bags and catch a plane early in the morning. Because the paymasters don't mess around, do they, boy?
It's a cutthroat industry. It is. You're king of the hill 1 minute, next minute, yeah, sat in economy for a 12-hour, 45-minute flight. The highs and lows of working in the media.
Yeah. Hey, safe travels, fella.
Someone's got to do it. Anyway, well, I've had a good time, mate. I've gone and enjoyed myself. I've popped across to Hong Kong. I've come back. And I've made some friends for life. And I just hope we can keep this WhatsApp group going with all my new rugby royalty friends.
Yeah, I just don't comment on it because I haven't got enough caps, but you're pretty active, aren't you?
Yeah, I love a WhatsApp group.
You absolutely love it. Hey, safe travel, fella. It's been emotional. Yeah, there's a bonus quote for you, listeners. It's been emotional. Really, it has.
And you enjoy your final week, David.
Yeah, we'll get through it, won't we?
Yeah. All right, mate.
Well done, boy. Well done, boy. Cheers, guys. Ta-ra. Ta-ra.
See you on the other side.